did you get at Taco Bell?
For lunch, I got 2 gorditas, a taco, and a quesalupa. And for dinner, I got a Crunchwrap Supreme, a taco, and a Doritos taco. Wow.
Right.
And I covered that stuff in Diablo. But I can't wait for Sunday morning. Sunday morning.
To be named podcast loosely based on Game of Thrones. We have no idea what's going to happen here. And loosely based on some Methodist ministers' opinions. So with me tonight is the Reverend Blair Setner.
Hello.
The Reverend Lane Davis.
How is it going?
Andrew, are you a reverend yet?
Not yet.
The lowly Andrew Chapel.
Thank you. I like that name better than Reverend.
So, guys, we're all Game of Thrones fans here. Some of us casual, some of us have read the books and spent too much of our life on this. But the three of you have all sorts of theological education. I have zero, so I will try to shut up and listen tonight. But I figure we can go through kind of what's going on throughout the Game of Thrones world. And you guys throw out some talk in what you're thinking and your opinions. I know Lane told us that our opinions on our other podcast are wrong. I'd love to hear that too.
I just misguided. Yeah, it's really, yeah, that's all I got.
All right. That's such a nice ministerial way of saying that. So let's start off with Daenerys in this episode. This last week, we get a debriefing with Jorah and Dario. Jorah reveals he has grayscale, confesses his love, and then he watches Dany get out of Vaes Dothrak as he is commanded to go heal himself and return to her eventually. Any thoughts?
So I let me jump in and just say that I have heard on some other podcasts that may or may not be related to this one at all. That
they aren't at mediocremovie.club, are they?
They might be, but I would say that there are some opinions out there that the Dany storyline is boring and cheesy. I feel like I've heard that opinion out there. Has anybody else heard that?
Well, I actually said it was a little cheesy, but I just meant this small snippet. She's my star player in the fantasy draft league, so I'm rooting for her.
Well, and I will say that her storyline is horrible.
Her storyline is not the most boring, but it is probably the second or third most boring so far. And I think anytime you have to like return and redo a storyline in terms of like burning alive and like not being burned alive, I don't like that. I don't like that they had to redo that. So I don't know how anybody else feels about that particular story.
Yeah, so I feel like what we saw was essentially the Rocky II of Daenerys, but it wasn't really Rocky II. They tried to play it like Rocky II, but it ended up being like Rocky V. And I just felt disappointed. And yeah, that's how I feel. Anybody else?
In this particular episode, or do you mean?
The burning again. We saw her burn once, and then she was actually fine. And then we saw it again. Like Lane said, they're repeating the storyline. And
well, so I don't agree. I think it's fine. It's hearkening back to, it's a reminder of her amazing powers. And so what? That's a really awesome thing. So why can't she do it more than once?
Now, what do y'all think about the blind faith of the Dothraki just following her?
It's definitely not blind. She just did a miracle in front of them.
It's like, I mean, they're like the savages, right? I mean, they're kind of like the Yeah, I don't know. I'm not a huge fan of the Dothraki storyline. It just the whole thing, it seems a little contrived to me, personally.
Okay. So, I need some practice being the host. That Kissel is always on that.
Yeah.
Okay, well, we can move on to Marine if you guys are done talking about Danny here.
Can I interrupt? I just want to say that this, the reuniting of Jorah, Sir Friendzone, and Daenerys. Can I talk about that for a second?
Please do.
Yes.
Because it felt like the writers were trying to do the same thing that happened between Sansa and Jon Snow, like this giant reuniting, this moment where you got to breathe this sigh of relief. And it felt like the writers were trying to do the same thing with Jorah and Dany, with this final confession of his love and her smiling at him and being like, get better soon. And I felt like it didn't deliver the same way they wanted it to. Maybe I'm the only one.
Here's the question I have. So Dany went in one direction with the Dothraki. Jorah went in the other direction to find his cure, right? What if the cure is in Danny's direction and he's like going in the wrong way the whole time? That's going to suck for him, right?
That's the story of my love life.
I mean, it's just going to happen. So whether basically it was like she said goodbye to him. That's what I felt.
Without actually committing to saying goodbye.
Yeah. She didn't touch him or anything because he's got grayscale. So it was just this like teary-eyed, but not really tears coming down her face.
It's like breaking up with a high school girlfriend or boyfriend. And you're like,
how long do you think it's going to take him to realize that she just broke up with him?
I wish I'd had a high school girlfriend. I wish I knew how that felt. I bet that's right.
All right. Well, the Sons of the Harpy have stopped murdering. Tyrion is not satisfied, though. He feels like someone else needs to advocate for Dany. That's what's going on, Marine. And he has this meeting with the Red Priestess, Kinvara. And she's going to kind of go to bat with some propaganda, I suppose. Or does she believe that Dany is the next person to be that she sees in the light? What do we think about what's going on here?
So I think this starts to get into the issue of like the religious overtones of Game of Thrones and like what do they mean? Which is like the most interesting thing that maybe the four of us can talk about, because we have like three theological nerds and then just one other nerd in this. So four nerds, and three of which have been to like seminary. So I'm like really curious as to what you other three nerds like think of the religion and just the way it's portrayed in Game of Thrones.
Blair, start us off.
All right. So, okay, let's kind of go through the major religions that we've got at play. The old gods.
Right.
Which Kissel mentioned in the last podcast are kind of like the children of the forest.
Nature.
Right. Weirwoods, right? Old magic. We've got the seven-faced god, which is the father and the mother, the stranger, the warrior.
I will say this is where like my Game of Thrones nerddom like starts to break down, because I have read the first book, but I haven't read the other stuff, and I haven't read like I'm not a big follower of the message boards, so like I like the show is kind of what I know, and this is where maybe the strokes get really broad when it comes to the religion part. So I don't know. I'm just wondering like the big themes of religion. I know you've got the old gods, the new gods,
The Lord of Light.
The Lord of Light. What's the Sparrow's gods?
He's the seven.
Yeah.
Okay. Or
and the seven.
And then you have the Drowned God,
which is the new gods. Sorry.
No, Drowned God is
I was answering
the Iron
Islands. Last.
Oh.
I was answering. The seven faced gods are the new gods.
Right.
And then we've got the Drowned God.
So okay. Kind of what you have looking like between, for three of the gods, we see something very specific. We see water, we see fire, and we see nature. It's only the seven gods, the new gods, that are kind of spread out amongst some different elements. Does that make sense?
Yeah, absolutely.
Does anyone else study any Egyptian theology?
Andrew?
I saw Prince of Egypt when I was a kid, and I totally got it, loved it. Yeah, that's all I got. There's a lot of gods, there's a lot of stuff, and I think one of the most interesting parts for me has become the fact that we have Jon Snow, who has been to the other side and back, who said there's
nothing. Oh, that's great.
And great. He said they're nothing. So basically, I mean, unless he's lying, we know that all of these things are not – there's no fruition that comes from any of it. There is just nothing, unless Jon Snow was the guy they were like, oh, let's make him see nothing. But it's interesting.
That happens in real life as well.
Right. Okay. So this gets to what's interesting to me about the religious aspect of Game of Thrones. Is like it is not so much concerned with the supernatural aspect of those religions. It is concerned with the political aspect of those religions. Right. Like it's not so much concerned with how do the old gods relate to the new gods, relate to the Lord of Light, whatever. It's how do those particular religions interact with the particular kings and politicians and politics of that entire realm. And that's what makes that show so unique. So anyway, I would be interested to know kind of where you see these particular religions sort of mapping out on the political landscape.
Okay. So I wouldn't say that the Lord of Light in this like crazy dark magic that is associated with it it's not exclusively unpolitical, because big plot lines have come out of it. Stannis,
yeah, absolutely, sure.
Yeah, like the killing of his brother and then his, you know, failure. And then her bringing, the Melisandre bringing John back to life. Like, these are all huge plot lines that have come out of this great magic, I guess. So politically, I guess, with also this magical stuff, I think we're going to see that religion in the forefront of what's going to happen next, I guess.
Yeah, and I think you make an interesting, or you brought me to an interesting point where she's done some magic, she's done some things, Melisandre, and things have actually happened. Now, is it magic or is it religion? I feel like we have enough chaos in this world that people have no idea which one is right at the end of the day.
Sure, right.
I'm calling it magic, I guess.
Yeah. I'm saying, yeah, so you're saying the magic is what makes a shadow Stannis, or possibly brings Jon Snow back to life, as opposed to a religious aspect. You guys there?
Yeah. This is going so deep. I have to think so long about it.
Okay. I'll just make sure. I heard a buzz in the mic, so or the earphone. So.
Yeah, no, that's a really like fascinating point about the difference between like the magic and the religion part, because the religion is so political and the magic is so supernatural, and like it's one and the same in a way on this show, and this is blowing my mind.
Andrew, any thoughts?
So many thoughts, Shane. Thank you for asking. So as far as the religion goes, and like I said earlier, the introducing of nothing after death for Jon Snow, really kind of has made me think more about the High Sparrow and his place. Because if there truly is nothing, after death, then the life becomes so much more important. And the High Sparrow is kind of, in a way, building himself up and as kind of a god in this world, and so many of the others, Melisandre and the Lannisters. It's made me kind of think about that if this is all there is, then the gods truly are those that are in control, those that are the highborn and the people running this Game of Thrones. I just used the title in the sentence.
It's the most BS thing I've ever heard you say, right?
I know, man, and you've heard me talk a lot. I know, I felt it too.
All right, so let me throw this out there, okay? So here is what I think the religions like stand for in Game of Thrones. Okay, so I'm gonna miss a few. So just like tell me if I'm missing something. So like I feel like the old gods and kind of the new gods sort of stand for the old school Catholicism, Protestantism, institutional religion of the world. And I'm talking sort of Christian side of things, because that's like what I know. But I know there are like other aspects of this too. And then the Lord of Light is really sort of more of your I almost think of them as kind of the like Calvinists. There's another podcast that Blair may or may not have been on where she talked about them being sort of like the Jehovah's Witness, which is a really interesting comparison. And I think like the Calvinism kind of adds on to that, because you're talking about like a certain segment of people that are the chosen ones. And it's like very doctrinally pure. And then you've got the Sparrows, who are all about they're sort of like a modern day evangelicalism that is just about purifying the state, and we're going to make everything pure. So I'm just kind of like curious as to what you guys think of how you would map this on to sort of our modern day religious landscape.
So I don't disagree with you overall. I think these are good comparisons. I will say that, so the Sparrow is, worships a new god. So he's, yeah, under the realm of Christianity, if we're going that route, but he's an extremist in the evangelical sense. I like that comparison. I think that's good. And then on the other side, I would say that the Lord of Light is also an extremist. I guess a word I'm just going to keep continuing to say is extremist. So we've got,
I don't know what's so
people,
extreme about burning your child at stake.
We've got a lot of normal people that practice religion. And then we've got fanatics, right? And so I think that's a play in this show.
I think I actually kind of see the Sparrow as more of a Pope type figure. So I think the comparison of the new gods to Catholics is pretty apt, especially when you consider like the Holy Trinity is Catholics, it's very separate things. And then Mary, who's equal to the Holy Trinity, right? Catholics? That's a joke. So you have seven, in the Catholics you have four. I don't know. And then there's a very controlling, everyone has to do this. There's a Crusades feeling to it. So that's kind of where I see that. And I see the old gods is kind of, I guess, kind of like the old Roman gods, I would suppose. So I think the compare both of those things to say they kind of lead into each other, both are Western-ish, is accurate. All right.
You did a good job with that.
Well, let's move on to Braavos, and I think the most religiously themed thing there, it was, I guess, on our television, was a 30-inch uncircumcised wiener. Can we talk about circumcision?
I mean, it is. It's in the Bible a lot.
Yeah, I don't know anything. Why do we? I have no idea. Can anyone help me on this?
Yeah, Lane. What can you explain it? I don't understand circumcision.
Yeah, the medical part too, Lane. Thank you.
I'll take a cut at it. Whoa! We could go for a long time on that.
But why not?
That was a shocking moment of the entire show. It took me a good 2 seconds to realize what I was looking at. that's where I am on that.
So, I didn't pay much attention during the circumcision ceremony. Where Jeff was taken from the room. Because it's not a ceremony anymore. It's just the cultural thing we do. I'm not joking. Like, why do we do this?
Okay. So circumcision in the Old Testament, in terms of like, still in terms of Judaism, is the covenant. I mean, that is a particular mark. And I would say that one of the reasons that Jews think of themselves and remain so distinct is because who the hell else would want to do that, right? I mean, that's like, hey, how can we, like, distinguish ourselves? I know, let's do that. That's, like, the most terrible thing to do. And so it still happens. And I guess the reason we still do it is there's some kind of medical benefit, although I remember reading some article in the New York Times a while back about how maybe or maybe not it's still medically beneficial, but so the way that happens in Christianity is you move into the New Testament and all of the original Christians were still Jews, right? And so the idea was or the question was, do we still have to be circumcised in order to be Christian? And Paul said no, and Peter said yes originally, and then he changed his mind. And so that's why circumcision is still talked about in the New Testament, and we still talk about it today. There is your 30-second history of circumcision.
That's pretty good.
Thank you.
All right, so let's move on from Braavos.
So hold on, the faceless man?
Oh, yeah, we could have faceless man. Yeah, sorry, I just got distracted by a giant penis.
Hold on, did anybody, like, for a while, when I read articles on Game of Thrones, there's this outcry sometimes I read about how so many women do not like how only really women are naked on Game of Thrones, and there's never any male full frontal nudity or anything like that. And I felt like this was what the writers and the showrunners were doing. They put a penis full on screen, and it felt like to me they were saying, you wanted it, you got it. Here it is in all of its glory right there.
Yeah.
Have it. And that's how I felt. And I felt like, okay, all right, David Benioff, thank you. I hear you loud and clear.
I was wondering, is this some kind of like alternative Bechdel test, which is instead of like two females talking to each other about anything besides a male, it's just one penis on screen? Like that's the opposite of the Bechdel test. I don't know.
If that's the case, the HBO series Oz wins the Bechdel test by far. Yeah, I think they definitely respond to what people are saying online. So this is a good nod to say, all right, we hear you. You're right. Here you go. Here's a giant penis. Or if you're watching on your phone, not a very big penis.
Depends on which iPhone it is.
Yeah. So, the faceless men, what's up?
So, are they just hitmen?
Yes.
They're just hired to kill people.
Yes.
But they also have some magic going on.
Correct. What do we think about the morality behind that?
Well, don't they worship a, I mean, who is the god of these guys?
The faceless man.
Yeah, okay.
I'm going to break our no typing rule and look it up.
Thank you, Shane.
There you go. So they worship the many-faced god, a god of death. So I guess it could be kind of with the old gods-ish, but it's kind of Valyrian. I could read the Wikipedia page, but it doesn't really help us out. This is a good pod.
This is boring. I don't think Arya's story is all that boring. I've heard other people say that it's boring. Do y'all think it's boring?
No, I love it.
Yes, I love it too. I think it's boring.
You do. Okay, why do you think it is boring?
Because I think we spent a whole season in season 5 that was kind of just set up for Arya. There wasn't a whole lot. I mean, they could have made her blind for some other way. It took a long time to get a little ways. And now I feel like in season 6 they've said, okay, let's just speed it up. Let's go. Let's give her Rocky montage. Let's do this. She'll learn how to fight blind, and now she's unblind again. I don't know where they wanted us to get. I feel like we haven't gotten very far, because at the end, I feel like she still knows who she is when she watches their performance and sees what people really think of her and her family and how he was executed. I think she's still holding on to who she is and is not a girl. She's still Arya Stark in her mind. That's what I got. And if that's the case, then we're still where we were before. Maybe she's just lying to, what is the guy's name?
Jacken.
Yeah. So I basically feel like season 5 and season 6, halfway through, we're back to where Arya was. She's still Arya Stark.
Okay. I feel like she has always been one of the more interesting characters, in just that, to me, that's like fascinating that she can't let go of who she is. Like, she's not going to just morph into some new character. She retains grudges, and she is going to murder people who she doesn't like. And like, the big question, you know, around this episode is, you know, is she going to murder the people that, like, the person she's supposed to murder, or is she going to go after a person who humiliated her family or whatever? To me, that makes her a really interesting character. I like her storyline a lot. I hope it continues.
Yeah, I like the general morality of it, and they kind of switch it up on you at a certain point. You want the Hound dead, then you don't want the Hound dead.
Right. Know? Yes.
So it's like, is it okay to kill him? Does he deserve it? I don't know. And now she's going to be a hitman who worships the god of death, which the best thing to do religiously for them is to kill someone if it's been paid for, and now she's in a weird spot again.
Yeah.
Yep.
All right, let's move on to the Iron Islands. We saw the King's Moot. Yara gets destroyed by Euron, presumably in the election. And then Euron is drowned and comes back to life in probably the worst religious ceremony of all time. Steal a bunch of boats. Thoughts?
Andrew, you start this one.
Man, I feel like I've been too negative on this podcast because I love this show. But this storyline also makes me kind of mad. Like, who is this guy? What's his name? The brother who killed his brother?
Euron.
Yeah. What? Who is he? We don't see him. Like, where is he? What? Okay. And now they just follow him and what? Man, it just makes me so mad. And then he dies. Did anybody else feel like when he was laying there after they drowned him and they were waiting for him to come back, like they were just going to be like, big gulps, eh? Well, see you later. Like, he wasn't going to come back. I was waiting for him to be like, well, that's it. But no, he came back, and so there's a whole other, I don't know. They need some more color in that region of the world. They need some reds and blues and yellows.
I think I would have liked it better if they had been like, well, he's dead. We killed him. Oh, well. And then the storyline would have been them following Yara and Theon to, like, get them back. They're like, hey, guys, we made a mistake. I'm sorry. Come on back. Like, that would have, I would have liked that. This was my second least favorite storyline of this last show. It felt too quick. This guy that just comes in and makes himself king. What was his name? Euron. We don't know anything about him. And again, maybe like I didn't read the books, so I'm coming at it as a non-book reader. But if I'm as a television watcher, I kind of saw him throw the dude off the bridge, Balon, and now he just shows up and he's king. And that it's like, I don't know you, dude. Why? I have nothing invested in this guy, so it frustrated me. I didn't like the storyline a whole lot.
I feel like that in general. That's how we've been with. What's his family's name?
The Greyjoys.
Yeah.
This storyline has really captured our imagination, you can tell.
In general, we haven't spent a whole lot on Pike. And so for them to have a couple episodes introducing Euron and then him becoming king just kind of feels par for the course.
Yeah. I will say, though, that the Baptist, if we're going to talk about it from the religious standpoint, because that's like our role.
Just about to ask you this question.
Thank you, Shane. The baptism ceremony was really interesting because there's like a very deeply theological nature to that, in that, you know, one of the interesting questions of Christianity is, why did Jesus have to be baptized? Right, so you've got Jesus coming to the river in the Gospels, and John baptizes him. Well, why did Jesus need to be baptized? And one of the answers, I don't know if there is a good answer. I'm not sure if there is a satisfactory answer. But like one of the answers is that Jesus had to be baptized into his death. And that's what that represents. And so in a way, this was a very deeply theological baptism scene, in that this guy was literally baptized into his death, in that he might have been dead for a minute or two and then coughed it back up. I thought that was one of the most religious moments of the entire series that happened right there.
Yeah, and I love the saying, "What is dead may never die."
Yes.
Just thinking about it, like, okay, I've died, I survived death, here I am back in this world.
So that also kind of goes with the Christian understanding of baptism, too. You die to your old self, you rise new in Christ, so you're free to be this new person.
Yeah, and it goes with the Christian understanding of you're raised to kill your other relatives. I think that.
Andrew, any thoughts on the baptism?
Not really. I'm just trying to figure out if I've seen that actor before. Euron Greyjoy. Yeah. He was rocking a crazy beard.
And, I was about to ask what you guys thought about the facial hair. I love it. It's like Wolverine plus a mustache.
Yeah, really. But the water didn't stick to it. I noticed like his hair was very wet, but it was very like dry fit beard. It sort of rolled right off it. So.
What was the movie that actor's in?
He is. Oh, God.
His name is he's a Danish actor named Pilo Asbæk.
Yeah.
He is in a movie called A Hijacking, which I cannot recommend enough.
It's a great movie.
Sweet.
And he does a fantastic job.
I feel like I saw that. Maybe not.
You may have. It was part of the Mediocre Movie Club. That's mediocremovie.club.
I love it.
All right. So let's go to the wall. And we get Sansa and the Littlefinger. And she meets him in Mole's town. And she's pissed. She gets to have a great speech. And gets to confront him about everything that's happened to her. And then she comes back and lies to John about, you know, what happened, or just kind of leaves that whole thing completely out. And then also we have love in the air.
Oh, yeah.
And Brienne.
Yeah, we
absolutely.
Mm. You saw that look. I think. You saw that look he gave her. I have given that look on occasion.
And how has it worked?
About the same as it did. It was, there was like a snort that went along with it, like a. It was, yeah.
Oh man.
So what do we think about what's going on at the wall?
So I was watching this with a friend, and when the stuff happened at the wall, we were like, oh man, Sansa lied. Oh, what's happening? Because I think, if I remember correctly, Sansa went through a major shift in what, near the end of season 4, when she told a lie to the people at the Eyrie. When she kind of started taking a Littlefinger approach to things. And that was cool. And then she came down with the, like, Tobey Maguire Spider-Man 3 darker hair. at the end of that episode, and so anyway, we saw a turn, and she's just been through a lot, and so she lied, and then they discussed all this strategy, and I remember they all left out of the gate, and I looked to my friend and said, "Wait, what? Where are they going? Like, did they decide something? Did that happen really quick?" I felt like there were a lot of details given, and everybody left, and we were like, "Okay. Where are they going? Yeah, I can't remember."
It's kind of like one of Blair's youth group meetings that I've been to. I'm like, where are the kids going? Blair's like, I don't know.
Yeah. Maybe.
Don't say that. They all get home safely. We practice safe sanctuary.
Amen.
Well, there's always two adults with him. I'm just like, you can only trust Travis and Jenny so much.
I will say that I think, like, I think I'm maybe, I wish Sansa had turned out to be more of an evil character than she is. Like, she's going to be one of the good guys, I guess, at the end. And maybe all the Stark kids are. I wish one of them had turned bad. And it could have been her, but I don't think it is.
I think it still could be her with how she's kind of manipulating Jon at this point.
Yeah, maybe. I wish it was a little more, like, obvious if she was manipulating him. Although maybe I wish it wasn't. Maybe it's going to be more awesome if she's actually going to be evil. So I don't know.
I'm still really interested in how Jon Snow's death and resurrection plays into his character, because he was so. It felt like he was so haunted when he came back. Did y'all still feel like there was, did you still feel like he was affected by that? I mean, did you still see a change? Because I feel like it's sort of there. I don't know what's going to come of that, though.
Yeah, that's a good point. And I think that this particular episode, this last one, didn't have enough of Jon Snow to know, you know? Like, yeah. I hope we get more of him in the next few episodes, because this one seemed to kind of just skip over him a little bit.
So Jon doesn't we don't really, yeah, in this episode there's nothing different from before. Like, hey, let's go fight, play soldier. And that's it. We see no result of him dying. I think it's because he was so abbreviated in this episode and manipulated.
Yeah, I would agree.
So before we move on, side note, Pilo Asbeck, I don't know how to say it, I don't speak Danish, is going to play Pontius Pilate in Ben-Hur, the movie coming out in August of this year. So there we go. I'm guessing, unless you've been in the future, that's not where you recognize him from.
So, Andrew, you have the complete Stanley Kubrick box set, if I remember correctly, which includes Ben-Hur. Have you watched it yet?
Ben-Hur? I hardly know her. No, I have not watched it yet. I actually, the last movie I watched from the Stanley Kubrick collection was Eyes Wide Shut, and I actually couldn't sleep that night because I was so freaked out. So it sits above the TV in its little corner, and I haven't touched it since because I'm terrified. So, yeah. Good. But it's a great thing to have. It's a great collection to look at.
I want it. Nicole Kidman lives in my town, like near me. I don't stalk her yet.
Because you live in Nashville. That's right.
You can't say that on the air.
I'm sorry. You live in Nash Vegas.
Perfect.
Nailed it.
Yeah.
All right. And moving on. Since we go north of the wall, we have Bran and the Raven. Bran gets bored like all teenagers and messes up everything. Gets the Raven killed. Gets the Children of the Forest killed. Gets Summer killed. And sadly, gets Hodor killed.
All right, so this is, I'm going to jump in here and say that this episode was the first thing interesting that has happened to Bran since episode one of this entire show. And, like, people argue about which storyline has been the most boring. Bran's storyline, by far, to me, has been the most boring until this past episode. I would love other thoughts.
So, I think Bran's storyline has taken a long time, and I feel like finally there's some payoff. Thinking about Bran's storyline along religious lines, I've been thinking for a long time. When they first got to the tree, I thought, wow, the tree imagery, like we've seen that a lot in religion, and we've seen that specifically in Genesis. The tree in the garden, the tree of the knowledge of good and evil. And I thought, what's going to occur? How is that going to relate to this in a religious sense? And what did we say? The three-eyed raven, the children, they're kind of worshipers of the old gods. Is that correct?
Correct.
And I thought the memory that Bran and the three-eyed raven were looking at, where the children, you saw the children shoving what looked like to be dragon glass into a man, into his heart, and he became a White Walker, correct?
He did.
And I thought that was interesting because it happened at the tree, if I remember correctly, and it was this idea that they were under this oppression, so they kind of took matters into their own hands, and I thought it was so interesting that it happened next to the tree. Because in Genesis, that's a similar idea that Adam and Eve kind of take matters into their own hands and decide that they are going to go around, God and decide for themselves. And so I saw that as similar imagery that these children are taking matters into their own hands and creating something of their own that is actually going to cause their downfall.
That's beautiful, Andrew. Job.
That really is. That kind of, I'm shedding a little tear right now.
Yeah, I had never thought about it that way, I guess, the tree. But definitely the good and evil and the fine line that is there exists in the storyline.
I would like add to that in that the idea is that the intention of what they meant for the White Walkers, which is, hey, you're going to go and defeat the evil that is coming up, sort of works against you. And so your best intentions actually bite you in the butt and don't end up so well.
Yeah.
Thank you. Thank you very much.
That wasn't as good as what I said.
You know what? Shut up.
So I guess that sort of brings us to the end of this episode.
Can I add a final thought?
Please do.
Yeah, this is kind of what I've wanted to say for a while about this, in that I am not I'm worried about the future of Game of Thrones. And I don't know if anyone else is worried about it, because I am hearing over and over amongst certain podcasts that may or may not be on MediocreMovieClub.com.
No, MediocreMovie.club if we're going to do hypothetical websites.
Okay, all right, cool. So,
it's a real website. Go there, everybody.
That website. There may be a podcast that is up there that mentions about how each episode of the season has gotten better and better and better. And I would say that in a way that is true, but I am also worried about the future, because what I feel like has happened in this particular season, and someone can tell me if I'm wrong about this, but is that we have sort of handed over the storyline of Game of Thrones from a storyteller, George Rico Martin, to whatever that stands for, we've handed it over from him to two television producers. And now we have a television version. And I'm a little bit, because we didn't really get to the Hodor storyline, but like, it bothers me a little bit that we are starting to like wrap things up in like kind of nice little tidy bows. And honestly, after Sunday's episode, when I watched it finally on Tuesday and started to think about it, I thought, this feels so much like a lost episode. And it wasn't actually until I was talking about it with somebody else today that I realized that the director was like a major Lost TV show director. And I don't know if you guys watched Lost or not, but to me, Lost was like a perfect first three seasons, and then the last three seasons were just a disaster. They were the worst three seasons of television I've seen. And part of it was just because they felt like they had to wrap everything up. So I'm a little worried about where we're going, because we just feel like we're wrapping things up in little bows. And the mystery is so much a part of this show that I'm a little worried. Those are my closing thoughts.
Yeah, I think we brought Lost up in a podcast that may or may not be at MediocreMovie.club.
Yeah, yeah.
And you may or may not be able to find it on iTunes at Mediocre Movie Club, along with this podcast, as we hopefully find this. But we did bring that up. I think, me personally, I think they're avoiding what happened to Lost, because they are tying things up. Lost is like, we got to make a big deal of everything. With this one, they're like, here's how we made a White Walker. It was for defense. Does it. That was the explanation. You're like, that makes sense. Right? And at the last couple seasons of Lost, some things just didn't make sense, and they were just thrown out there.
I hope you're right. I hope you're right.
Okay, I think they want, like, I think they're going to split this last season into, like, 6 to 8 episode seasons, or, like, mini seasons, and make it a giant one, and we want to focus on the good characters, and I think that's what we're getting down to.
They've got to continue to move it forward.
Right.
Therefore, they're going to wrap some stuff up. And George R. R. Martin, write faster, dude.
Rico.
I mean, it's just at this point, you know, he's had to hand it over. The great thing is that the HBO writers and producers are working with him. So at least they're getting lots of insider info.
I was a little worried today when I read something that he was going to do the Hodor storyline a little differently.
Right, yeah.
So I don't know.
Whatever, I feel like
we'll see.
That's cool. Like, keep people engaged.
As a book reader, I'm excited to have a different story to read than I'm watching.
Me too. And I enjoy not knowing what's happening in the book, actually, this season, which has been fun.
Well, I hope you like your books.
All right. Andrew, any final thoughts?
I think I may be one of the few people who really didn't care that much that Hodor died. And wow. I feel like I never really got to know Hodor. And feel like we could have had a good time. And they just decided to kill him off. Secondly, the guy who plays the Night King, is that what it's called?
Mm-hmm.
Is actually the guy from Batman Begins who shoots Bruce Wayne's parents. So that'll blow your mind.
Like, yep. He's a jerk. A
little bit of, yeah. So he's not a nice guy.
Well, all right, guys. I guess that kind of wraps us up for our inaugural, our first Ministers and Game of Thrones mix and yet to be named podcast.
Mediocre Methodist Club.
Yes.
I'm down.
All right.
So maybe we can do this again next week. Schedules permitting, that'd be great. Or maybe 2 weeks. We'll see what happens. We'll see how many unique viewers you jokers bring into the website. It's all about stats, yo. thanks for coming. Thanks for hanging out with me for this hour. There we go. I'm used to being on the other end of saying thanks, Kissel, for having me.
Yeah.
Guys, this is when you guys say, okay, bye.
Thanks, all right, bye.
Later.
Yep.